Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome, ladies and gentlemen, to the Donaldson Files here on the Bachelor News Radio Network. And just to remind you, keep tuned. Over the next couple of weeks, we're going to be doing some changes, and we're going to let you know on the broadcast of the show. So stay tuned. Also, tonight's show is brought to you by, it'll be sponsored by America at the Abyss. Will America Survive? My latest book. It's the election. As the election of 2020 ushered some uncertainty, America works through a pandemic made worse by government policy, a crime rate, and riots hit urban centers, and a controversial election. This book examines the trends of the past 18 months to examine government policies that, you know, took away our freedom, divided virus, and end up killing more lives than it probably did. And I detail all of that. And we also talk about, you know, whether or not the Republican Party can combine the populism of Trump with the conservatism of Reagan, and synergy both possible and needed to create this new coalition. Ladies and gentlemen, America at the Abyss, will we survive? Well, if you want to know, buy the book. You can buy the book on LibertyHillPublishing.com. It's available for pre-order right now, or you can pre-order it through Amazon.com or BarnesandNoble.com. So, America at the Abyss. Will America survive? And now we have on the show Claire Davila. And Claire works now with the Senior Project. I guess, is it the Senior Project where Freedom Works? What is your exact title? Hello?
Hello, Tom. I am working with Freedom Works Foundation as the Director of Senior Initiatives.
Senior Initiative, yes. Okay. Now, the reason why you and I have had this conversation, to let people know, you know, you've done work on behalf of the foundation. So we've worked together, and we've also worked together,
gosh, yes,
since the 2014 project in which we...
Yes. Yes, sir.
Yeah,
we were sharing the conservative. It was a Hispanic Post was a platform to reach out to primarily the Hispanic business community in the United States, of which there are many, and we wanted to share conservative ideas with them.
Yeah, and so this is, like I say, under complete disclosure, ladies and gentlemen, but Claire. And why I brought her on, because she has put together what I thought is one of the best things I have read in a long time, as far as it's, and we're going to go over this, it's the Financial Freedom Toolkit. It's, you know, it was the Center for Economic Freedom with the Freedom Works, but it's, I'm going to put it this way, this is not a, I'm not going to view this as a partisan type of toolkit. It's more of, if you read it, it gives you good advice, especially if you're 20 or you're 30 years old, how best to prepare for the future, your financial future. And I want to kind of, and I'm going to begin it with this, because I want people to kind of understand and put it this way. You know, in 1980, the stock market, I think, was around 1,000. Between 1980 to about going into about 2007, about 63% of Americans became investors. That more than doubled what was in 1980. So you had Americans, and you had a market that pretty much went up by 20 times. That means if you put in $1,000 in 1980, that 1,000 would have turned into 20,000. You can imagine. And if you had basically been putting in a little bit, year by year by year, where you would be financially speaking. In 2007, 2009, you had the Great Recession, and the last set of data I've seen, we saw a drop in Americans participating in the investor class. But it went from 63 to 53% in about every group. The only exception to this I can think of was people over the 100,000 were the only group that basically increased. Other groups decreased across the board. And what this means is that the market went up by three times from 2009 to the present, close to three times. And a lot of people lost the opportunity to gain wealth to save for their retirement. And what this toolkit does, it gives people a reason to get back into the investment and how to grow your nest egg. And so I am going to start with chapter one, and we're going to go by the chapters and your nest egg. When, how, and why do I grow my savings? So why don't you try and get to the very basic of why get started now? If I'm 20, what should I be thinking about? Explain why it's important to start putting money away.
Tom, it's my pleasure to be on this afternoon, this evening, and to share some of these ideas. My background has really been in investment management. I was in the financial industry and as an investment manager, Tom, for about 28 years. And you and I not only connected with the Hispanic Post, but we also started my senior initiatives program with a poll that you helped me conduct, really measuring in the United States how much Americans had saved for their retirement. And this Financial Freedom Toolkit was inspired by that poll 3 years ago, where we discovered that Americans that are entering their late 50s or 60s really don't have a lot of retirement savings. And so I wanted to really create just a short 8-chapter, 15-page booklet that would help young people start their savings now, no matter how little they had, with the understanding that even though our country has many conflicts and issues, and as you spelled out at the beginning of the podcast here, that, you know, there's a lot of conflict over voting rights, there's a lot of conflict over the last election, et cetera, but this is still a nation that really creates prosperity and opportunity every day and every hour. So even if you start investing as a young person in your 20s or 30s, just a small amount, the companies that the United States is able to really grow and allow to prosper creates an opportunity for ourselves as savers to begin investing. The wealth in this nation in 2021 totaled $141.7 trillion. I mean, that's just a massive accumulation of wealth that has happened three ways: through people owning their businesses, through investing in the stock market, the public companies, and through real estate. So what we're going to do is really start with why are free markets and why our opportunities in America are so special to allow us to create our savings. Even today, we are in the middle of a technology transformation, which means that every company is going to digitize or digitally transform their operations to be more efficient, to be faster, to be more productive, and to be more opportunistic in the years ahead in ways that maybe you and I can't even imagine right now.
Yeah.
So the first thing
Please. Go ahead. Yeah, the rule one, start saving early.
Right.
So, I mean, these are some of the points you make. So talk about start saving early. Why should I? If I'm 25 years old, why should I start saving now?
Because the most important asset you have when you're young, the young people may say, oh, I only have $100 or I don't have any money and I can't save. But the point is that you have time. So if you were able to buy one share of Apple, say in 1980, your return today after 40 years would be 100,000%. Now, a company like Apple doesn't come across every day, but you would have been able to buy one share for $20. So the point is that find the S&P index is a great overall exposure to the market. You can put as little as $100. And as long as you start saving early, even small amounts, make a determination to save a small amount. If you can't do it each month, maybe do it twice or three times a year. And most importantly, if your business, if you're employed at a company, check to see if they have a 401k and make sure you invest in that 401k because the company can match it.
Now, hold on to thoughts, Tom Donaldson. I'll be right back here with Claire on the Bachelor News Radio Network and the Donaldson Files.
I never get the flu.
My kids don't need more shots.
I don't have time.
We're all healthy.
My asthma's under control.
I'm pregnant. I've had the flu. It's not a big deal.
My kids are too old
for flu.
The media
is exaggerating.
I can fight it naturally.
No matter how you build your excuses, the flu can blow your house down. Keep your foundation strong. Vaccinate. Learn more at flu.gov.
A message from the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services.
This particular segment will be brought to you by America at the Abyss. Will America Survive? My latest book, published by Liberty Hill Publishing. It's at libertyhillpublishing.com. And you can get and pre-order this book right now through Liberty Hill, or you can go to Amazon, or you can go to barnesandnoble.com. They're all available, and the time has come. America the Abyss, will America survive? Well, you're probably saying, will they survive? Well, you have to buy the book to find out. So this is, back to Claire. That's a good point. Now, the other thing, you say, take advantage of technology resources.
Yes, sir.
Go ahead.
Yes, sir. Well, the one thing that's changed so dramatically, when I got into the business in the 80s, last century, there was no internet, right? And there were no technology tools. There were no apps. There was nowhere you could get information on the markets or on companies except going into the library or going to financial institutions themselves personally. Now, you can go online and find so much information. You can go, and I'll share some other names in the later chapters, chapter 5, but
yeah.
You have Robinhood, you have Acorns Invest, you have all kinds of information you can find online to give you some reassurance that you know what you're doing and you feel comfortable making an investment in the stock market. And so that information is profound. It's called, if you want another name for it, it's financial technology or fintech. And that's a growing, massively growing area to take advantage of for free online information.
Yeah. Okay. Obviously, make a budget. Figure out your saving plans and then make purchases of stocks. But you kind of make the point, make a realistic budget so you can include this as part of your budget.
Right.
And
right. No, please.
And then invest. Yeah, your investment, here's the rule for your investing clarity will help you better understand public policy with a better understanding of the market. So kind of explain that, investing
sure.
clarity will help.
Sure. Well, everyone knows, you see the two political parties arguing about free markets or arguing about taxation, capital gains tax, spending plans. Once you become an investor in America and in the markets, you have actually a slightly better understanding about taxes, what we mean when capital gains taxes are going to be increased, because your assets and your investments, as they increase, if you take a profit, that taxation impacts you. My point being that it gives you a better understanding of what the debate is when we talk about free markets and we talk about taxes and we talk about spending policy and federal budgets. That's the main thing, Tom.
Okay, so, now let's go to chapter 2. And this, is a very interesting chapter because it talks about the power of longevity investing. And you kind of give an idea of what you can accomplish, even starting out a little bit.
And we give some examples here where if you start with $3,000 today and you put only $100 a month for the next 10 years, basically those numbers would grow and compound over time into the tens of thousands of dollars. Now, I give a certain return assumption, and we can never be sure what the market is going to return. But my point is that you can see your money grow over time. And I, for one, am 100% invested in the stock market, I might add. And I don't know what the market's going to return this year. But the point is not to be frightened or stressed by volatility. As long as you become a long-term investor, you don't measure your returns just year to year. You understand that you're in there for the long haul, and you have confidence, as I do, that these companies will continue to perform and outperform and grow your savings. So just as an example, I give a small example about my sadness that we never took our Social Security taxes and put a small amount, just a tiny amount, 5% of all of the Americans' taxes into Social Security, the investment fund. When President Clinton actually was a big advocate of that idea, and Republicans pushed it very strongly and called it privatization. The point being that the Dow was 8,000 at that time frame in the early 90s. Now the Dow is 37,000 today. So again, all these examples show how the markets grow over time. And I believe the markets will continue to grow over time because we have the best and the brightest people really in the markets investing and growing companies. And there's more transparency than ever, which means that you get much more visibility into company activities and actions because we have 24/7 media coverage, and we also have the internet and all kinds of information flows that keep us as investors informed. So I feel more than confident that we're going to see enormous returns in the years and the decades ahead.
Well, okay, now because there's the other aspect you came in, because you make some pretty interesting numbers that I wanted to kind of follow, because let's say if I retired in 1951, and that would have been pretty much that first group, because I think the first Social Security check was 1940. So basically,
right.
If you were 65, if you're 65, retired, it would have cost you, you could have had $28,000. That would have been enough to retire.
Right.
Now today you're looking at $541,000 is pretty much what you would cost on the average to have a comfortable retirement. First of all, how would you calculate those numbers when you say, how do you define comfortable retirement?
Well, of course, in the last 50 years, since 1951, of course, you know, housing, you could have bought a beautiful home for $25,000, you know, and healthcare was much, 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 much cheaper. On the other hand, today, healthcare is much more expensive, as is housing, as is caregiving, much more expensive. But the technology for healthcare has also improved dramatically. So in that 70-year period, Tom, our lifespans have increased by 20%. So we are actually comfortably living into our 80s and 90s today. Now, not everyone, but a greater and greater portion of the population. So that means the cost to retirement is much greater. And so because we're living to older age, that also increases the out-of-pocket healthcare costs that we may have to come up with, because many people, in fact, most don't know that nursing home care is not covered by Medicare. So only if you're very poor does Medicaid cover it, but those facilities are certainly not, you know, the highest grade facilities. But Medicare does not cover assisted living facilities. That has to come out of your own pocket.
Mm-hmm.
Right. So $500,000 may not be enough. That's why we're urging, you know, younger people, save as much as you can and now, so that you have enough. By the time young people in their 20s and 30s retire, you know, we might be looking at $1 million as a cost to retire in some parts of the country, if not more.
Yeah. So here's the other thing. You do a inflation calculator too. because this is, I think this is kind of interesting. It goes along because you put those numbers down, and then you have an inflationary calculator that I think is very interesting, but it kind of shows people an item, would an example. I'm saying right now, if something cost a dollar in 1980, it's going to cost, what, $3.37 today.
Right.
And so it's –
Right.
So
that's
so
the other policy issue that we watch very closely and you discuss, Tom, is that the reason that we really are critical of inflation and we need to fight it is because it basically disintegrates your cost, your the power of your purchasing power over time.
Mm-hmm. All right. Now, the other thing, too, is you got a compound interest calculator. So, NerdWallet, kind of explain that. Yeah, what is,
Again, it's another way of, and NerdWallet has a compound interest calculator that just more or less basically what a dollar costs, it basically dollar flows the numbers that I'm talking about. So you can calculate, so I just start with $4,000, and I put in $100 a month for the next 30 years, and my stock portfolio makes 10% a year, how much will I make after 30 years? How much will I have in my savings? And so that calculator will determine you have $307,000 in your account as long as the market averages out 10% a year, which is, again, not unrealistic. You know, a lot of estimates are 4% or X percent, but the point is over time, the to give an example, the stock market over time in the last 30 years has probably averaged close to 10% in the last 30 to 40 years. 2008 during the financial crash and 2009 were devastating because the market was down 30-40%, you know, in that 2 year period. And so that's why the numbers are just under 10%. But establishing, you know, 8 to 10% is not an unrealistic expectation if you are a stock market investor focused on the technology side, which is growth.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So that's what the calculator does.
Yeah. So basically what it does, it gives you kind of an idea. If I put this amount away, this is what I can look forward to down the road. And obviously, you know, as you get older, you're going to actually, your income should actually continue to go up. And so that means, in effect, you can, in fact, even invest even more. And
correct.
So this money could actually.
Definitely. Tom. And also, again, what we need to really encourage everyone, and I mean, whether you're young or whether you're middle-aged or old in your middle to older years, stay invested in your IRA as long as you can, and definitely invest in 401k and have the employer match that 401k retirement savings and put all that money in stocks, because that grows tax-free over time. So that's why these numbers are so realistic, 10% double-digit returns over decades, because that money is growing tax-free. That's why rich people get rich. That's why they take advantage of tax-advantaged vehicles. And you can too.
I was about to say, because this is basically, you know, these are programs that, for the most part, gives, let's say, middle class and people just starting work, the same, you know, a lot of different advantages of tax and tax breaks and tax benefits to go along with that. So now Chapter 3 is basically tips from top investors in financial tech.
In the world, in the world of financial tech. And I just showed a few, I gave a few examples. Yeah. And of course, one of my favorite, actually Senator Tim Scott from South Carolina, he was a financial executive and he started his own financial company. So I've never found anyone that has more real insight, really great insight into the power of the financial world and financial literacy. So I included him because he gave the very time-tested advice that success is created in the studio apartments and garages kitchen tables and classrooms across our country. Success and economic growth is not created in conference rooms in Washington, D.C. So the point here is that Americans create the economic success that our country has benefited from for
hundreds of years. I have to be honest, I did not know he was into the financial advisor.
Yes. He was a financial advisor, and then he started his own insurance company. He's an entrepreneur, and he had a great mentor. He grew up with a single mom in South Carolina, very poor, and he was mentored by a manager at Chick-fil-A who told him, found him in the mall and started mentoring him and told him, being an employee is great, so get a good job and do well, but hiring employees is even better. So he encouraged him to be an entrepreneur. And they were great friends. Unfortunately, the Chick-fil-A manager died early from cancer, so he didn't get to see Senator Scott become a senator and very successful in Washington. But the point here is, you know, this whole point that D.C., you know, sometimes pretends that they create our livelihoods and they create our opportunities, and the opposite is true. Americans create these opportunities. And all of these people in this chapter emphasize that, including my favorite fintech company called Acorns, who said most people who have wealth today came from nothing. Parents came from nothing. So this idea that anyone can grow wealth is central to what we do. So Acorns educates, provides insight and facts and education elements so that you can invest and understand what you're doing.
Yeah, hold on to that thought. It's Tom Dawson, Dawson Files here on the Bachelor News Radio Network. We'll be right back talking the Financial Freedom Toolkit with Claire Davila. And
you might know me, I'm 50 Cent. You may follow my tweets, my Facebook friends. Odds are a few in a 6 degrees separate us. We're that close. What's crazy is 1 in 6 don't know where their next meal is coming from. These are your coworkers, your neighbors, your friends. Hunger's too close for us to ignore. So visit feedingamerica.org/hunger and find your local food bank to see how you can make a difference. From one close friend to another, let's do this. I'm 50 Cent, and together we are Feeding America.
A message from Feeding America and the Ad Council.
And don't forget, ladies and gentlemen, you can pre-order my latest book, America at the Abyss, Where America Survived, through Barnes & Noble, Amazon, and LibertyHillPublishing.com, which is associated with Salem Media. So order now, and you'll probably think of some more time, will America survive? Well, you got to buy the book to get the answer. So now we're back here with Claire. And all right, let me throw this. Here's an interesting is a person either disciplines his finances or his finances disciplines him. That was Orrin Woodward. I thought that was pretty good.
True enough. The lesson being that you either now again, this doesn't include people that have unexpected tragedies or disasters, you know, where you have an unexpected health illness that takes all your savings, or there's a disaster and all of a sudden you lose, your house burns down and you don't have insurance. But the point here is that by disciplining your finances, what you do is consistently grow your savings a little bit every day, or excuse me, a little bit every year, put it away, don't touch it. And make sure that, you know, you're happy with your job, you're happy with your wage, certainly your income. If you're not, find a place where that your income can grow and where you are able to feel that you'll grow your opportunities and your finances over the decades. If you don't do those things and find yourself in deep debt, credit card debt, you know, unexpected savings gaps, then the finances discipline you, and you find yourself in trouble. And so with understanding understanding, you know, on how to really balance your debt. Don't go over the top, and make sure you keep track of it carefully relative to your income, and save some money as often as you can.
Which leads us out of chapter four, because
right.
these are the, you know, five worst financial mistakes to avoid. Number one, not establishing a rainy day. Explain.
Yeah, I think the most important thing, and many in your podcast have probably heard this, always put some savings aside for an unexpected consequence. And people estimate 6 months of your salary, and that's probably a good rule of thumb. Whatever your salary is, make sure you keep that in the bank. Don't invest that in stocks, just in case, because if you do have a tragic, some type of consequence, you need that money right away. So keep it in the bank. Keep it in a money market fund and keep that available, 6 months of your income. If you can't do six, do 3 months, but have something so that you don't take money out of a credit card that charges 25% or 18% interest. That's crazy. And don't ever do that. Make that an absolute last resort.
All right. Learn to invest wisely. Don't confuse trading with investing. This is very good advice, but explain what you mean by that.
Right. So the first thing I would do if I was a first-time investor or a young investor, even an old investor that feels concerned about volatility, buy high-quality stocks, or more importantly, buy the S&P, the Standard & Poor's Index, which gives you exposure to 500 companies. They're all high-quality companies, and that keeps you safe in terms of anything that can happen. Quite frankly, I mean that sincerely. But, you know, you're supposed to put that away and not trade it every day. If you're in very, very, very high volatility elements like Bitcoin or any of the cryptocurrencies, those are highly volatile, extremely volatile areas to invest. People normally trade those things, and that's very different from investing for the long term. You know, so that's not to say that you don't buy Bitcoin, you know, but my point is that buy high quality stocks if you're just starting out and stay invested there.
Yeah. Well, here's seriously, like I said, I want to kind of follow up on it because I think it's a good point, because basically I'm reminded of the old line in gambling, the house always wins. And when
right.
you start playing the market like, okay, I'm going to try to outsmart the market, that doesn't always work. Whereas if you just simply let it ride, you know,
right.
you know
right.
the odds are in your favor. And I think that
right.
that's it. And I
that's
think that's
exactly
really
right.
sound advice.
That's exactly
and,
right.
Which also goes right into, you know, when we talk about investing versus trading, selling too early or liquidating portfolios in a panic. And
right,
we've had our share of panics just in the past decade, 2007, and certainly in the early part of 2020 when we had the lockdown, the pandemic. So,
right.
again,
kind
that's
of exactly
follow
right,
up
Tom.
With that.
Right, that's exactly right. The old saying here holds true time and time again, which is you build your wealth, however you define your wealth, you build it by the time in the market, not timing the market. None of us will be able to tell what the high is and what the low is on any given day or any given year or after any given unexpected consequence. So you stay invested. As long as you're with high-quality companies, just ride it out. That's what I did when the disaster happened in 2008, and we thought the banking system was going to go into the Great Depression. You know, you just ride out these volatility elements, and you don't try to time the market because it's impossible. We just don't have a crystal ball. And also, I do watch CNBC. I do watch the business channels, but they create a lot of drama as well. So make sure you don't fall prey to being swayed by, is this the top of the market or is this the bottom of the market? Because particularly this year, we'll probably see a lot of volatility, Tom, you know, as the Federal Reserve raises
yeah.
rates to deal with inflation, or we have all kinds of policy conflicts, that it's going to be volatile. So stay steady. that wins the race every time.
Misunderstanding your earning potential relative to your expenses. Explain that.
Yes.
It's another mistake
that
you talk about.
Yes, exactly. I think, you know, I'm a big fan of the retail and retailing and all this, but it's really important not to overspend. What that means, spend too much on a new house or spend too much on, you know, clothing, shoes, travel, when your income level can't match your spending. And I go back to the fact you just don't want to take out credit card debt in vast sums or even moderately high sums, because the interest rates there, they're designed to make money by charging you 18%. Okay, on that credit card debt. So that really is what eats into your savings. The saddest of this right now that students are facing is student debt. And, you know, again, my view there is I'm a fan of college, but I'm not a fan of a student graduating with $300,000 in student debt. And if that student is going to work in social work and make $50,000 a year, it doesn't make sense to carry that kind of debt. You know, you can go to a community college, you can have alternative educational sources and not be burdened by hundreds of thousands of dollars of debt. It's going to create havoc in your life in the decades to come.
Yeah. Well, I guess maybe in a way it comes down to, you know, making that decision, what you want to do with the rest of your life. You're going into college, but also looking at the colleges themselves is a different. I mean, you can get a decent education at a state university versus a very expensive private education. And, you know, and nothing against theater major, master's degree in theater art or whatever.
Right.
But I always thought to myself, I could remember during the Occupy Wall Street, and they interviewed this gentleman who, this is like in New York, and he's saying how he got this master's degree in theater art. And I thought to myself, you know, there is a wasted master's degree in a city where you are dime a dozen, and a lot of the people who are, you know, who basically already made it basically didn't go to college to get a master's degree. They learned it on the job, or they learned their acting, or and I think it's, you know, it's one of those things where a lot of people, you know, need to sit back and ask themselves, okay, where do I want to go? Where do I want to be? That type of deal. And also, because it's like I said, not everything needs a college education per se.
Right.
Or certainly, you got to sit back and say, I know I'm going to get in trouble for this, but there's a limit to what you can accomplish with a women's study degree or whatever degree it
is. No, there is. I mean, and again, Tom, what you're saying in context, if you're going to come out of that school with those studies and have $200,000 in debt, I mean, that takes a long time to pay off, if you can pay it off, and it postpones your ability to buy a home, maybe start a family, you know, all these things. And I think that's we have to reexamine that very closely for the generations to come, let alone, you know, the kids that have that kind of burden right now. It's, I would say there are lots of alternatives now that there did not exist years ago.
Yeah.
And young people should take advantage of it.
And the last thing real quick is, avoiding online frauds or frauds in general. You know, to me, as a simple case, if somebody calls you up and say, I like to be in your investment portfolio, I would say that's probably not yet the way to do it. I would go with, you know, experience, local people. You know, experience. I mean, like I said, I've been with, you know, right now I'm with Merrill Lynch. I've had a financial advisor now for like almost 30, you know, close to four decades. But it was, you know, somebody we inherited who had a reputation. And since then we're on like our third or first investor individual that we work with, but it's, you know, these are people and they also understand your goals and your objectives. And I think that's very important. We're going to take a quick break here. This is Tom Donaldson, Donaldson Files here on the Bachelor News Radio Network.
A boy born in Joplin, Missouri was fascinated by anything with wheels and a motor. The odds of him going on to fascinate millions with his talent? 1 in 260,000. The odds of this born racer having 157 career top 10 finishes in NASCAR? 1 in 125 billion. But every driver seeks the pinnacle of their achievements. The odds of him winning both the Daytona 500 and the Brickyard 400 in the same year? 1 in 195 million. The odds of a child being diagnosed with autism? 1 in 88. I'm NASCAR driver Jamie McMurray, and my niece has autism. Learn more at autismspeaks.org/signs. Early diagnosis can make a lifetime of difference. Brought to you by Autism Speaks and the Ad Council.
And don't forget, ladies and gentlemen, the final segment of this show is going to be brought to you by America at the Abyss, Where America Survived, my latest book. You can get this book on LibertyHillPublishing.com, also on Amazon.com. You can pre-order it right now. It'll be out at the end of the month, but you can pre-order it right now. And you'll even get the answer to the question, will America survive? But you have to read the book to get the answer. And now we're going into Chapter 5, Digital Tools. Now, this is something, again, I didn't deal with this when I don't deal with it now, but obviously younger people are much more attuned to this. So kind of talk about some of the digital tools that are available.
Sure. So, Tom, one of the great things that have changed in the last 30 years and really really a great advantage to younger investors is that all these digital tools are available. And a lot of these digital tools also have much cheaper to zero fees. It used to be, and you were talking about Merrill Lynch, and I'm with Neuberger Berman, and you pay a 1% fee, you know, they manage your money, and they make your investment decisions for you. But 1% is still a lot of money, and trading commissions used to be much more expensive as well. So all of these new digital tools are either free or cost just a few dollars. And Acorns will help you make investments, and you can open up an account and get information on types of investments that fit your personality and your interests and your goals. Betterment is also a wealth management tool, solely a wealth management tool, again, that you can get invested online. Now, I have no connection to any of these companies. I'm just sharing examples of how wealth management is online now. Investment information is online. Robinhood is probably the most famous because it was the big trading tool for GameStop and all these other companies. In fact, during the COVID pandemic first year, you know, you had 25 million millennials that signed up on Robinhood to be stock traders and to make investments and that type of thing. And so they had a swashbuckling kind of persona. And they also very much talked about crypto, which crypto is very important to the younger generation. In fact, the millennials that are probably closer to 40 now, I would say certainly more than 50% of them hold crypto in their accounts. So those areas will be very important today and will only increase in interest for the younger generation as we go forward. So all these companies, and there are probably a couple hundred others, 200-300 others, and that number will grow in the years ahead. But they really are, I think, trustworthy. You can check into them and do business, and I think have the advantage of having a ream of information that doesn't cost you a lot of money.
Okay, let me ask you a quick question, because here's the thing. You know, like I say, you know, I mean, you know, I meet with my advisor once a month. We sit down, we look at everything. Yeah, we look at what's going on the economic side. I mean, yeah, we look at the different portfolio, that kind of deal. And let me ask you this question. Is there any place with any of these apps where, or is there any one of these, I know it's like Tornado Investor, which I'm not familiar with, but they have a money mentor or connected.
That's right. That's a new thing. Yeah.
And so is there any place where I can, that your person can get online and say, you know, talk to somebody, say, hey, look, what's going on? What's your thoughts? Yeah, I read this this bill, this health thing, you know, this economic thing is coming down the, you know, this congressional bill is coming down the pike. How is this going to impact, you know, do they have that ability to find that individual they can talk to as an advisor?
Right. So I didn't include it in this list, but that's a very good question, Tom. So you can open up a Fidelity account and or Charles Schwab. And believe me, they are low cost as well to no cost. You can make your own investment decisions. You know, I'll buy the S&P index or I'll buy ARK Innovation Fund, ETFs, exchange traded funds. And you can talk to somebody there. And it might cost a few extra dollars, you know, but Fidelity, Charles Schwab, Vanguard probably has something. And those companies probably among the three of them manage trillions of dollars. But there is someone you can definitely talk to, you know, there.
Yeah.
Online, there's also LVEST, which specializes in women investing. And they also have someone that you could probably talk to, you know. And you can always go back to the regular firms as well. You know, the fees are just somewhat higher. So it depends on what you're looking for. And if you talk to Merrill and I talk to Neuberger, you know, we can talk to them whenever we want. So in a way, it's what you get for, what you pay for.
Oh, yeah. Now, let's go to the crypto. I mean, I know it's Chapter 7. I want to get back to Chapter 6 on inflation. Cryptocurrency. Yeah, what's your thoughts on crypto? I mean, how do you view this as an investment tool?
Well, I think, you know, the main thing I would say for younger generations, you know, Gen X, boomers are least exposure to crypto. We only have 4% of our assets in crypto. I actually have zero right now, but I'm going to add to it by buying Coinbase. Millennials have over 50%, and, you know, Gen Y probably will have 60, 70, 80%. So I think that they're much more comfortable with volatility. They basically feel, okay, this thing's going to go back and forth, and Bitcoin is the biggest name out there. There are probably 2,000 different cryptocurrencies, some better than others, so buyer beware. And if you want exposure to crypto, the safest way to do it is probably just to buy the Coinbase stock. Coinbase is the platform where these digital currencies are traded, so that gives you exposure. I think Bitcoin and cryptocurrency has a future. This is a debate that is constantly taking place. Some people don't buy into it, but the reason I think it's going to have a major impact 20, 30 years from now or longer is, you know, young people, Tom, you know, and you and I have both talked about this often, they don't think Social Security will be there for them. And they also worry about the debt getting to $100 trillion and the value of the dollar in the decades ahead. I don't think that's an unrealistic concern.
No, that's not an unrealistic concern. Well, here's the thing, because to me, it's saying, okay, right now, Bitcoin is $42,000.
Yes.
You know, I've been keeping you know, the reason why I bring this up because, you know, I have a you know, since June, because I'm like you, I'm zero. You know,
yeah, I'm zero.
And I've been sitting there debating, you know, do I put a portion or something just to play around with it? And I have to be honest with you. I mean, you mentioned Coinbase. Is the other aspect is this is digital, and while they are guaranteeing you, A, you can't be hacked or whatever, but still this is aspect of digital.
You can
that
be hacked.
Makes,
definitely.
Yeah.
Definitely. So when I say Coinbase, what I'm talking about here, and I'm talking, I am super conservative because I'm really afraid of being hacked, but that's just me. And I'm not talking about going on Coinbase. You can go on Coinbase.com and buy a cryptocurrency, okay? What I mean is buy the Coinbase stock, which is trading at 230 or something. So you just buy that stock, and if Bitcoin goes back to 100,000, Coinbase will go to 500. You see what I'm saying? It'll rise in price significantly as well. But young people go on Coinbase and buy crypto all day long, you know, so or on other platforms. And I think the crypto hacking will continue, but I also think the security elements will also strengthen over time. So kids are buying Ether. So Ether is much cheaper. I can't remember what it's trading now, but it's like a couple $100 or $300.
Well, it's much cheaper. Now the thing is with Bitcoin, again, I'm not sure how the other works. I know with Bitcoin it's X percent. I mean it's like an old gold standard in the sense that there was X percent of gold out there that's been
mined. Yes.
And so it was never, you just can't increase. You can only increase the amount of gold based on how much you can actually dig out of the ground. And if you dig X percent out, it's it. That's it. And Bitcoin basically is designed. It's X number. There's X number of Bitcoins available to buy. And there's nothing more, nothing less. So, I think that's, I'm not sure the other cryptocurrencies are in that same line. And, I have to be honest with you. I mean, part of my problem I always have with Bitcoin would be, to me, currency is something you can buy, buy things with. And obviously I never could. But on the other side of the equation, I'm always kind of wondering, will this be like the new gold or this go alongside with gold when you have inflationary issues coming into play and suddenly, is that a possibility?
Yes. So that's the big debate. And let me tell you, Fidelity has made a big commitment to cryptocurrencies and Bitcoin. SkyBridge has the hedge fund of funds has a Bitcoin, fund.
Yeah.
And so I think, whereas some others don't think, I think Jamie Dimon at JP Morgan was more skeptical, but I don't know. I think it's like anything else. It's, this is just the beginning, the end of the beginning. I believe that there are going to be transformations 50 years from now. Okay. So if, a 22-year-old is buying Ether cryptocurrency, I think they have a good reason to worry about how governments are managing their finances.
they're
going in, right?
Basically what you got is a fiat currency. And I could, we've been off the gold standard since the early 1970s. And even though, let's say, the 1980s, you had people, who tried to tie the dollar to some sort of base. Several base. I remember that was a big thing. What was that? The gentleman who was the Fed Reserve, Alan. He used to be
Alan Greenspan.
Alan Greenspan, yes. I mean, that was one of the things. Now, he would never tell you he was doing that, but, it was always rumored that he was looking at a series of base. But obviously, the inflation issue is an issue, again, that impacts your investment. So very briefly, we're getting close to the end of the show. How should you think of an investor think of inflation when thinking of investment?
Right. So I think when the biggest inflation hedges, and by no means do I think we're going back to the 70s where we had 14% inflation at the high and an oil shock and all these other things. But if we get to 8% this year, don't be surprised. We're at 6.8 today. So the best inflation hedges are definitely not bonds because you have 10-year treasuries, U.S. Treasury bonds, yielding 1.8%. Okay, so inflation yielding 6.8 means that you're losing 5% of your of your investment every year. So stocks are the best inflation hedges. Real estate is a very good inflation hedge. And the debate is that supposedly gold is an inflation hedge, but it's had a volatile history in the last year. But the point is commodities are supposed to be a very good inflation hedge. And while the jury is out this year so far, those are the three things to look at. If you own real estate, that's very good. Own some stocks. The market has sold off significantly. Putting a few dollars in is a really good idea. And a safe investment would be JP Morgan. I'm not giving you stock advice. I'm just giving you examples that has a 3% dividend. So those are the things that you want to look at. again, there's going to be a lot of political volatility, you know, volatility and spending, and those things are not good for inflation. And we've had other issues that have caused inflation, as you know, energy-wise, cutting off inflation, energy sources is really bad for overall inflationary issues. So those are things to really worry about.
Okay.
But not enough to change your investments. Pardon me. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. The last chapter review of, let me make sure I get the chapter correctly here. Responsible review of debt. Explain.
Right. Right. So interest rates are going to be moving higher. How fast they go, I don't know. And mortgage rates just went from 2.85 to 3.4. So we're still in very low interest rate, mortgage.
Yeah.
Yeah, we're still really low.
I can remember interest rates 18%.
Yeah, definitely. So you just want to make sure that you always, part of responsible investment in a financial picture is making sure that you keep track of how much debt you're taking on and as little credit card debt as you can, unless it's an emergency. You know, you always want to keep that on the low side because there's no reason to pay those kind of rates. And as far as student debt goes, you know, they have high interest rates too, unfortunately. So you want to keep a handle on that. Because if you carry those debt, the student debt was mostly what I was referring to, that if you carry hundreds of thousands of dollars of debt for a long time, you're going to have a problem in the years ahead.
Yeah. And I know, like you say, you state the average debt was like $37,000. But, you know, if you go to Hyberg, that is going to be quadruple, at least.
Yes, it is.
And I guess
so it's something that, it's a tough issue right now for young people, you know, in terms of carrying that debt. Just make sure now has never been a better opportunity to get a high-paying job. You know, I mean, you really can. The competitive environment for high-paying jobs is great right now because you've had so many people leave the workforce. 40% of boomers are retired, 45% are retired. So basically, if you're an employee, you're in the driver's seat to find a really great paying job with a great 401k. Take advantage of it.
All right, sounds good. Okay, I'll tell you what, we're about the last minute and a half of the show. So what I'm going to do, first of all, where can people get this booklet? Is there a place where they can download this booklet?
Well, thank you so much, Tom. We're going to be putting it online on our freedomworks.org website, and you'll find me under Retirement Readiness. And so we'll have it there next week.
Okay, so next week they can go ahead and through freedomworks.org, correct?
Right, freedomworks.org, and find the Financial Freedom Toolkit, on our website there. Or you can contact me at C. Del Villar, that's C-D-E-L-V-I-L-L-A-R, at freedomworks.org, and I'll send you a copy directly, the PDF.
All right, sounds good. Well, Listen, thank you very much. Appreciate you coming on the air. Like I say, we'll have to have you back on the air for more of this because I thought this was one. I mean, like I say, this is an excellent idea that you put together. It's one of the best things I've seen in a long time. And thank you for putting it together. This is Tom Donaldson saying good night from the Donaldson Files.